It's Monday, October 6, 2008, and you're listening to episode 118 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 1 minute. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
My name's Chris.
Oh, Chad actually gave his name. Yeehaw. I'm so proud. All right,
I'm doing that now. Your newfangled weird way of introducing ourselves.
Yeah, newfangled's like 50 episodes old or something like that.
But yeah, how long did I take off? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, and how far are you behind in the gaming industry? I mean, come on. Exactly. This is newfangled to Chad.
Hey, how far is the gaming industry All right. behind me?
Three announcements. First off, Chris is a bitch. Second announcement. Worldwide Wing Night on November 8th, Saturday. If you're in the St. Louis area or going to visit the St. Louis area, we will put a link to that location. Once again, it's going to be Cyborgs on Dorset.
Who's not going to be there?
At 7 o'clock p.m. Now, I may not be there. Here's why.
Well.
The reason I may not be there is I am considering going to visit Tex in Seattle. And
now two people are going to show up to this thing. It's going to be Pat and me there with 500 wings and we got a party going on. Yeah.
So if I
one show up to this,
do go out to visit Tex in Seattle, then Tex and I are going to be putting on Worldwide Wing Night West on the same night. That's Saturday, November 8th.
That is a lot of W's.
I don't have an exact location and I don't even know 100% I'm going out there. But if I do, I will be at Worldwide Wing Night West. So just something to be thinking about.
You'll be at Dan's Vacation Seattle is what you'll be at.
I'll be trying to get Tex to take me to Microsoft and show me the new dashboard.
Oh, please.
And he'll
going to show you crap.
I know. He's
such a drone.
He is. He is the perfect company man. If you are a large corporation looking to hire a sycophant, Tex is like your perfect person for
you
this.
You want someone to just say, yes, sir, and then pucker up.
And actually believe the company line even after you've paid them and they left the building.
Mm-hmm.
Tex is your man.
Yep. He knows the company him. He knows everything.
Yes, that's the company him.
The secret handshake.
The ode to the emperor.
That's right.
He sacrifices 1,000 cyber souls a day to Bill Gates.
That's right.
Or Steve Ballmer, whoever the hell's in charge of Microsoft.
Apparently that 1,000 souls a day didn't really help their ad campaign.
No.
Have you seen those?
No. Oh, gosh, they were horrible.
They kicked Seinfeld out for the actual release ones because those were just like teasers. For the real ones they're actually going to release, they kicked Seinfeld
just
out.
You know, if you don't know what we're talking about, type in Microsoft ad campaign.
Seinfeld.
And then some bad word like or terrible or whatever.
Hussy.
Yeah, hussy. Now, Chris, you are a marketing guy, right?
No, yes. He's just a moron.
Well, okay.
I am both. I am both, actually. I have an announcement here before you ask me a question.
Yeah.
My awesome wife just brought me some chai tea, so I'm feeling pretty good. So fire away.
Wait a minute. I thought your wife wasn't there.
Oh,
well, she's here now.
We caught you in a lie.
I can't believe anything Chris tells me anymore.
You didn't catch me in the lie when you were talking about the shots of tequila and beer and undressing, but you did.
Yeah, we told the man
because she wasn't there.
We told the man to prep for the show to take 3 hard shots of tequila, 2 slow beers, and while he's drinking the 2 slow beers, tell his wife to undress before him, and then whatever nature takes his course.
It wasn't so much as tell as it was demand.
And then he's like, no, I didn't take the tequila shot.
She's not home.
Wife's not home to hold my hand.
But she just magically walks to the door with steaming hot chai tea ready for her.
You know, I do love me some chai tea.
I think Chris is a liar. I think he just urinated in a mug and he's like having some kind of bad trip that it's his wife.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, before this gets too disgusting.
If I did, it tastes wonderful. It's like angel's tears.
Chris, what is your professional opinion of these terrible Microsoft commercials?
Well, here's the Seinfeld Bill Gates commercial. My semi-professional opinion is
you're totally professional opinion.
That's great. Our third announcement.
Chris, I want to hear this.
I watched it, and I thought, and I didn't get it. I'm like, oh. Basically, it was a commercial about nothing.
Yes.
Just much like the show. And I didn't find it funny. I didn't find it quirky. I didn't find it interesting in any way, shape, or form. Now, for the ones they followed up with where everyone's saying, I'm a PC, to me, it's a good response ad, but it's still a failure on their part, because what they have done, succeeded in doing, is allowed their competition to define them. So now they're forced to spend their time trying to fight that definition rather than blazing their own trail and trying to tell people what they're really about. They're fighting that preconceived definition that Mac set them up with. Yeah. So it's not necessarily doing them any good, really, because when everybody sees those ads, all they're really thinking about is Max. So,
you know, I didn't actually think of it from that standpoint about how you're, you know, you just respond to your own competition like that, and you do your message from a position of weakness. That's pretty interesting. So in your professional opinion, this $300 million they spent on this was a complete waste of money?
Well, no, it wasn't a complete waste of money, because it keeps people like me in business, because it airs on TV stations that I and other people like me work at, so then it thus signs my paycheck. So, no, that wasn't a complete failure in that respect. But in other respects, I question its effectiveness.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Well, those ads made me think about baked beans. Now, moving on to our third announcement, the Warhammer Online Guild.
Oh, my God. It's like, it's all this stuff we said about Age of Conan, how we're going to try and build an Age of Conan guild. The Warhammer Online Guild is like exploding. It's really cool. Now, granted, we're not a 300 person guild, and quite frankly, I hope we never hit those kinds of numbers, but yeah, we've got up to like 30 people in the guild now. It's really cool.
Yeah, the Warhammer Guild has been a real runaway success. Yeah. So if you are at all interested in online games, or you're already playing this one, once again, Thorgrim server on the order side, just /who/fear/the/boot. Just slash who fear the boot. Look us up and join, because it's doing really, really well.
We've actually very slowly... We have members in there now who aren't Fear the Boot people, who are just like, hey, we just want to join a cool casual guild. And like I say in my ads online, you know, we're a friendly, helpful guild and we're recruiting. So it's cool. All three of us play. Chris isn't really a person, so we don't count him. But
he's not.
No, so I'm not even really here.
Yeah, this is. It's a great game. It's by far the best MMO I've ever played.
This is the first MMO you've ever played.
Well, right? There's that.
Yes. But so, you're enjoying the hell out of it.
I am. I'm having a great time.
And it isn't going to punish your computer like Age of Conan was. It's like fairly accessible.
System requirements are significantly lower than Age of Conan was.
Mm-hmm.
Which is strange, because the graphics...
It's a better game?
Well, the graphics actually look a little better than Age of Conan. There's not as many hard corners and jagged edges and such.
Now, Dan, as a person who played World of Warcraft for a couple of years, and you enjoyed World of Warcraft, right? Would you say Warhammer Online is a better game, or the same, or worse?
I will,
because World of Warcraft is the 900-pound gorilla. It's the big thing in the room.
I will say this. I think comparing Warhammer Online to World of Warcraft right now is an unfair comparison, because World of Warcraft is about 4 years into its release.
Yes.
Whereas Warhammer Online just came out. But if I compare Warhammer Online to World of Warcraft's release, because I was in the pre-release beta of both.
Yes.
All the way through their release, I was there at the midnight sales and all that.
And
crap.
The inability to get online.
Yeah, on both. Yeah. If I compare the two at release, Warhammer Online is 10 times the game WoW is, which I think says only wonderful things for where it's headed from here.
Yep.
This is by far the smoothest, most bug-free, and I'm not saying there's no bugs, but the most smooth and bug-free release of an MMO I have ever seen.
Yeah.
And I'm a midnight release fan of just about every MMO that's ever been put out. So I have pretty good experience with which to judge this.
Yeah.
And I think Warhammer is headed for they've got some really neat concepts in there, like the Tome of Knowledge, which rewards you for doing the most random and unexpected things.
I went exploring and I gained the level and all this lore and fluff. And that's like what I'm into. I did that in World of Warcraft just because I'm into it and never got rewarded for it. This, I got a level out of it.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe it. From Battlegrounds and such, I killed a bunch of Dark Elves, and it gave me a Dark Elf killing medal that's now hanging off of my
nice
box.
I gotta go pick that up. You said you had to the library.
Yeah,
I gotta pick that up.
Yes, sir.
Chad, I have to say, with that little bit of information that you just threw out there, you actually suddenly piqued my interest, and I put down the book that I was looking at.
Really?
Because to me, an MMO is somebody who just got the initials to Masters of Orion wrong. So, you know, I never have played an MMO. Sure. I've been curious about such. I guess you could say I've been MMO curious, but, MMO curious. There's a definite difference.
Let me tell you this, you know, you can take all those tests and stuff online. What kind of MMO player are you? The achiever where you get like tons and tons of gear? Are you the PvPer like Dan, who just, you know, kills and kills and kills?
Or, not a PvPer.
Well, you PvP a lot.
I do.
So anyway,
at least three times a day.
I always rate the explorer. I will like stop leveling, stop getting gear, stop doing the quote grind, and I will just go off. I will fill out my map. I will go to in World of Warcraft. I went to places you weren't supposed to go using terrain exploits that will get your account temporarily banned for a week or a month. And I never got caught. And I had this group of friends in my guild, and we were like the explorers, and we did that. We saw all this content before it was released because we just loved exploring and we love going places and stuff like that. This game rewards you for that. It, like, you go to a place and you see something lying on the ground that's really small, and you're like, what the hell is that? And you click it, and all of a sudden this page opens up, and you have this book, this virtual book of knowledge, and it opens up and it tells you this story about the events that happened there and the people that it happened to. And it's a narrative story. And you get experience for that, and you get like little tiny rewards. Now, you're not going to get your huge dragon slayer plus 1,000 armor of doom out of it, but you're going to get some nifty little, you know, perks. Whereas I did that in World of Warcraft.
Well, that's not entirely true, because you actually can get some usable gear.
Really?
And also some character, what they call tactics in the game,
yeah,
which are like these permanent buffs that you can get only from the Tome of Knowledge.
Yeah.
So there are some things like that that you do get just by wandering, just doing strange stuff. Like, you can also get titles. Like, in the Elflands, there's some little snotling or something sleeping under a rock. If you just push a rock onto it, you gain the title of the peculiar.
I went to a graveyard, and there was a gravestone you can click on, and it gave you a little story about how this grave seems to be disturbed. And, you know, it's like some people cannot leave the dead alone. Some people don't want to be left alone when they're dead. And, you know, it's like some creepy thing like that. And I got the title of the Skeleton Hunter. But it's just little things like that that make this game cool, that just put that little edge of polish on it.
Right.
That while World of Warcraft had that polish, I mean, because that's what Blizzard's known for. Blizzard is known for the polish they put on their games, and that it's totally there. I loved World of Warcraft, but I'm done playing it. Played it for 2 years. I'm done. All of their little polish was just that. It was like, it seemed out of place. It was little one-off things. You know, it's like you go there and there's this little joke or this little in-joke or this little Easter egg or this little terrain feature. In this, they have that same level of Blizzard polish, although it's not done by Blizzard, but it's incorporated into the game.
Right.
It's incorporated into the fluff and the feel of the game.
If I compare this game to where WoW was at release, it's
better.
Light years ahead of it, which I think speaks wonderful things for where it's headed. So once again, if you're interested in joining us, I'll put a link in the show notes to the spot on the forums with the info. But catch us on the Order side, the good guy side, on the Thorgrim server. Mm-hmm. And
they actually, you know, do it. They don't say, well, neither side is good or evil, and one is just misunderstood, but honorable. No, one side is good, one side is evil, like the bad guys. And you can play the bad guys, but we play the good guys. So
that's because we are good guys. Or you guys are, anyway.
Well, we try and think so. Yeah. Maybe one day you'll be a good guy, Chris.
Well, first he's going to have to go out and get a computer, because you can't play it on the Mac.
Oh, no, I am a PC. I have a desktop PC.
Ah, cool. Dan, you're kind of wielding that screwdriver as if it's a weapon. Do you have some, you know?
Yes, like, I'm angry. My milk dug box is empty. I've eaten all my milk duds. I don't have any more.
I want to tell you that I am sorry your milk dud box
is empty. I'm like a little toddler. Instead of having a crying temper tantrum, I'm going to go on a screwdriver stabbing spree.
I am not filled with milk duds. If you stab me, I will not spring forth milk duds from my body.
I just can't win.
He is not a milk dud fountain of youth.
That's true.
Oh, but if he was...
All right, Chad, but you are filled with topics. In fact, you think you've got 3 episodes worth of topics.
I don't know. I mean, Dan, you took the wind out of my sails here. So I
So what I do, I beat each of you down.
Yeah. So I have this idea for doing a series, and we don't know if we can get a series out of it. I say three topics, but I'm, you know, I'm the loud one who talks.
Well, I know it's three topics. You said three shows.
Three shows.
But you're not putting them in a numbered list, which is important.
Yeah. Dan said that we can get one show out of this. So what we're going to do is we're going to see. We're going to talk about this, and if the moderator, you know, just wants to be right, he'll just cut us off and, you know, plow through them real quick. But I have this idea of the role beyond the archetype beyond the archetype. And this is whenever you play a game, no matter what system, what setting, what characters everyone's playing, it doesn't matter. These roles always come up. You have the leader, you have the healer, you have the ninja guy, you have, you know, the skill guy. I don't even know. That's going to be one topic, defining what these roles are.
Pat, do you agree with that? Are there roles in an RPG?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Definitely. All right.
Thank you guys for tuning in.
Wait, son of a bitch. Now, okay, hold on. The second role. The second role.
Shut up, Chris. Mommy and Daddy are talking.
Mommy, Daddy, and are arguing. So
you can't see me. Raise my hand.
The second series or the second show in the series under my sort of format would be now. If I just keep babbling on like this, maybe we can get three shows out of it. Is the game master define role is when a game master looks at you and says you are going to be the leader. You are going to be the healer. What works with that? What doesn't work with that? You know, how do players bristle against that? One of my examples was Star Wars. The game master, to keep things organized so that you don't have, you have five players in your group and five players go to command school when they make character classes.
Star Trek, not Star Wars.
I'm sorry, Star Trek. You're absolutely right. Five characters go to command school and suddenly you have five ship captains, which doesn't really work. The game master might say, you're captain, you're bridge, you're, you know, you're the helm, you're the engineer, you're weapon system. And that really works in that system. But if you're playing D&D, you know, where you're just this generic adventuring party or a mercenary party, and the game master says, you're the leader, you're the healer. Joe, you don't like playing healers? Screw it, you're the healer anyway. You know, does that work? And we could talk about that. And then the third one, what was the third one, Dan?
Leaders.
Oh, yes. The leadership role itself, how a person is a leader, you know, does it come up naturally in a party? Because there's always that one guy and there's different types. There's could be the shouty guy like me whose voice is just louder than everyone else. And I just talk over everyone else. So my plans get done. Or you can you have the leader who just like talks and, you know, it's like, OK, you do this. The plan comes together and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can get three shows out of this, but it's going to be up to Dan to see how much he sabotages this just to prove himself.
Oh, I won't sabotage. I don't think I'm going to need to. If I was a gambling man, I wouldn't think I would feel the need to. So let's start off with your first one.
Yes.
Roles within the party.
I got nothing.
All right. Topic.
I'm on my way to a win here. You know, as I think about roles within a party in any game, and the obvious example is D&D, where you need the fighter to stand up front, the cleric to stand in back and heal, the mage for utility and damage, the thief to get you past the traps. But it's not just D&D. For example, if you're playing a science fiction game, you probably need someone who can fly a ship and someone who's got the science skills and somebody who can carry the big machine gun.
And hold on a second. Are we talking about needing those or what actually appears at the table? Because I think those are two very different things. I mean, we can sit here and talk about what we need, but when, you know, to use an expression, when the rubber meets the road, what really happens at the table? I mean, a lot of times you don't get that at the table because you got two guys who want to be rogues. You got three guys who want to be fighters.
And see,
when I played in college, I had my whole party. They all wanted to be fighters except for one guy who wanted to be a fighter thief.
See, I hate that. I hate it when people are like, when we're making characters and says, well, nobody has any first aid skills. Nobody's a healer. We need someone to be the healer. Why don't we just kind of, you know, I have a group of friends and we have adventures. Granted, we're not slaying dragons. We might be going out to a bar or something. And nobody's the healer when we do this adventure. I mean, the only role we might have is so-and-so is the designated driver. But, you know, life doesn't work like that. Life doesn't, you know, unless you're in a military unit or
here's
something.
The thing, the pragmatism of it. When the rubber actually hits the road,
let the dice fall as they may.
It's very, very hard to get through the plot missing roles that are critical to that game.
Oh, hard.
And I have always made a pact with my players as a game master. When I'm game master, I make a pact
with my
players.
We have to sign this contract. Yes. It's a red ink. He says it's not blood, but we wonder.
Yes, the devil's there to witness it and everything.
Yes.
Where I tell them, if you guys do not take a role, I will adjust the game so you do not need that role.
Or but, perhaps throw in an NPC.
But very few game masters do that. Where if you don't have a healer, they're not going to start going any easier on you once you're getting your ass kicked. They're not going to
but
have
more
healing.
It's not a competition. I mean, why are the players getting
it
their
shouldn't
ass
be.
Kicked?
I'm not saying it should be. I'm just saying this is the pragmatism. This is or, what happens.
Or if the players are getting their ass kicked, isn't that a cool part of the story?
Yes, it is.
Well, until TPK.
Well, I mean, that's TPK is total party kill. And I think I'm sure we've hit on it in the past 2 years. I have a whole string of outrageous cussing responses on the TPK.
Well, right. But my point is that very few game masters will suddenly adjust the game or go easy in one regard or another because the party's missing something.
I don't know.
I don't agree. I don't agree with that. Cause I think that most game masters will, they'll, you know, whether it's throwing an extra potion of healing in with the treasure they might find or, making it a little bit more easily accessible with a healing NPC. I think that most game masters will make that adjustment. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to take it any easier on them, because I think they want to reinforce the fact that these are the roles you chose, so this is going to be some of the price that you pay, but
well,
getting
see,
that access
right
to
there,
the healing...
Right there, that's exactly what I'm talking about, that you're asking the party to pay some price for what they didn't take, and
I don't
therefore...
care if I pay a price. It's all about the overall experience, whether my player gets maimed or hurt or is at a disadvantage. A role-playing game is not about avoiding disadvantage. A role-playing game is about doing what is most realistic and fun.
Everybody now, brings ingredients to that table. The game master brings his ingredients, the players bring their ingredients, and whatever mixes. I mean, yeah. if you bring this set of ingredients, you shouldn't necessarily go back and change your ingredients unless there's some extreme error being created where
but
you just absolutely have to hit the reset button.
Every book that had an ensemble cast, and that ensemble cast was the absolute optimal ensemble characters for the situation they're being put in, boring book. And one or two might be fun to read, but if book after book after book was like that, no, I mean, I like challenge. I like disadvantage. Within reason, within realisticness.
Okay, there you go. Within reason. And I wanted to say this because I think the tack that you're taking there is just sort of, I think you're going to an extreme by saying, hey man, if we all want to make fighters, let's just all make fighters and throw caution to the wind. And
I am totally for that.
And that's fine. But I think what you have to realize is in the little bit of unbalance that you might have is you might not have one or two of those archetypes that were mentioned. I think you're going to have, if there's mm-hmm. five basic archetypes, I think most parties, most people that sit down to play a game are going to have at least, say, three of them in there,
right,
just by the luck of the draw. So you might have one or two not represented, and that's really more, I think, we're not talking
about the archetypes like the D&D cleric. You have to have a fighter. Those are the easy ones to hit because I mean I think D&D
right.
We come from a base of D&D, so a lot of that is influenced by it. But we're talking about the archetype beyond the archetype too. I think we're focusing a lot on...
Are. You can have the language guy, the fighter, the hacker,
yes, exactly.
The face man.
The like we were talking about, the leader, the right. Ninja guy, the guy who's all combat, all
there's
skills.
There's two counterpoints I would set out to that.
And you're holding the screwdriver, so I agree
absolutely
totally with what you said.
At least it's a screwdriver this time, not like a shotgun like it was about 50 episodes ago. But there are two things that I would say that I think one of these two things is going to be true of damn near every gaming group out there.
Really? What you're about to say, you are shotgunning out.
Yes.
And you're saying that 90% of the gaming groups
absolutely
are like this in your judgment. But we are Fear the Boot, so we are right.
Right, absolutely. Statistics will catch up with us eventually.
Indeed.
One of two things. Either one, the players are going to want the ability to explore every option and every possibility of the plot. And what I mean by that specifically is that if you walk in, let's say you're playing a cyberpunk game and you don't have a hacker, suddenly hacking into the compound is not an option. Hacking this guy's personal file to learn about his background is not an option. If you've got a sci-fi game where nobody speaks an alien's language, suddenly trying to negotiate your way through is simply not an option. And therefore, any choice that you make...
Is negotiating with an alien ever an option for
you? In my opinion, no.
Not if you're Captain Kirk.
In some games, it might be. But any option you have, there are whole areas of the plot and whole possibilities of action that now become completely impossible because you've not covered the bases. In D&D...
Hold on, I got a counterpoint to that.
Okay. Well, hold on. Hold on.
Chris is frothing at the bit here, man, and I love it when Chris starts going.
Let me get point two, and then Chris can go hog wild.
I'll forget by then, so go ahead, go for it.
I say, well, I've had enough tequila, I'll probably forget point two if I don't get it out. In fact, I'm already forgetting point two. Point two is uniqueness. I have played in a lot of groups where everyone, or at least a lot of the players, want to know that their character is unique and important to what's going on. Because if everyone at the table can do exactly what they can do, that takes something away from the game and the fun of the experience for them.
See, I think that is... That point two, is where we start to blur the line between archetype and the archetype beyond the archetype. You know, it's that meta archetype. Like, I think that if you're playing Shadowrun and everybody is, what are the hackers called?
The Deckers.
Deckers. If every single person is playing a Decker, then you're not unique. But if everybody is playing, someone's playing a Street Samurai, somebody's playing a Decker, somebody's playing a Mage or whatever, and then you get the archetype beyond the archetype where they're all kind of playing the same meta archetype, where everybody is like some sort of swindler, or it's like everybody's the face man. I think that when you get to that archetype beyond the archetype, everybody can play it in a different way. It's a lot softer. It's a lot more, you know, feel and emotion and how you spin the character that's a little different. Do you see what I'm saying?
No, I follow what you're saying. Yeah. But like I said, I think that
but it is a gray
there,
area. Yeah.
All right, Chris, go ahead. I'll pretend your opinion matters.
All right. You always do. The point to your first point is that if there is, say, for example, if there is no hacker at the table, then suddenly hacking in there, you know, becomes not an option. That may be true for the players around there, but then suddenly to me, what that says is that allows, really in a certain sense, for a little bit of a divergence, a creative divergence that can happen. So suddenly now the players are forced to find a solution where they absolutely do have to get hack in there. So then they have to then diverge a little bit from the plot, find a hacker, and then negotiate with them, and then maybe even negotiate with their benefactor. And then suddenly you've got this organic change to the story that, yeah, the GM didn't necessarily anticipate, but suddenly that story now has taken on a bit more of a realistic aspect because they had to work with the cards that they were dealt and go around and deal with that situation. If your players are smart enough, they can overcome those quote-unquote obstacles because they didn't bring the right amount of people to the table.
But the counterpoint I would make is...
Oh, I've got Jamie a counterpoint.
That's cool the first time, but when you have to do that the second time, and the third time, and the fourth time, and the fifth time, because you've got a party of nothing but street samurai, so your only option is to shoot through the front door or bribe a hacker every single time.
See, that's my whole point, is that it's not about every single person taking a street samurai. It's not about, like, well, let's go away from Shadowrun. Let's go back to, like, D&D.
Okay.
It's not about...
Which stands for, it's really, in this case, stands for default and defer.
Yeah. It's not about every single person taking a fighter and no one taking the healer. It doesn't matter what class you take. It's about what role you as a player take within the group, whether it's in character or out of character. Are you the leader? Are you the one who tells everybody this is what the plan is? Are you the face man? The one where, you know, you have guys with guns coming out their ass, literally. Like in Shadowrun, and you have the one guy who, when it comes to a face-to-face conversation, you got to talk your way past the mafia, Don. you have so-and-so come up, and he's just smooth as glass no matter what character he's playing. And he can, and what, if he's playing a dumb character or a smart character, he can spin the role play to where he gets you passed into the club or whatever. You have the caretaker, the one who, again, 20 fighters in the group. It doesn't matter what class, what whatever. You have the guy who's like, hey, you know, so-and-so is low on hit points. This guy is low on ammo. So-and-so, he keeps bitching about how injured he is, but he has two damage boxes filled.
Damn.
Yeah. And this is the person who kind of like, you know, make sure everybody is equipped, has everything they need. He's sort of like I said, the caretaker of the group. You have the guy who's the, you know, the plan guy. He comes up with all the ideas and stuff, but he can't quite articulate, like Phil. You know, God love the man. He has outrageous ideas that we make fun of, but like we always joke, we make fun of him and make fun of him, make fun of him, and then we come around and we do exactly what he says because he has a plan. And we all have so, and you know, he's the plan guy, and you know, he's exceedingly good at what he does. And like I said, it's all about, it doesn't matter what you're playing, it doesn't matter what class, what archetype, what your character, how deep your role playing is. This is what you do in character and out of character. It's the roles that the players take. And my theory is, this is my blanket statement that I'm going to make that people are going to yell at me for, is that I think that when you start thinking about these concepts and you look at the players in your group, you will find the same people taking on the same roles game after game, no matter what character they play.
I'm going to agree with you there, and I think this actually is going to touch on a point that we made in our last episode, mm-hmm. where we sort of touched on the characters that each of us play and what sort of rut we get into.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned that, and sure. So I think that applies here. Yes, and like I said, it comes down to the player personalities. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you bring to the table, and you know, what kind of characters do you have? And so, yeah, I think every character you have is going to have that same kind of, like you say, the archetype beyond the archetype. And what it is it flows back into what kind of characters do you play, and what part of you is that character. So I think, see, we're tying it all together here, folks.
And Dan, I can't really argue with you on that aspect either, because I'm incredibly guilty of it. And I think part of the reason
I don't think it's a guilty. I think that when it's just something that you do.
I think part of what causes that problem, if it is even a problem, it's a frequency issue. At least from my perspective, it's a frequency issue. I don't get to game often enough where I feel the bug to try something experimental that may fail. Mm-hmm. And then even if it did fail, I know I can try it again in a couple weeks. Yeah. You know, that doesn't happen. So it is comfortable to go with an archetype beyond the archetype that you've always done, because mm-hmm. you're familiar with it, and it makes it easier for you to immerse yourself in the game, and you can kind of forget about really deep character development and just enjoy what you're doing.
I think that I want to get back on something you were saying, because the thing that you kind of want to say is, oh, it's a problem, it's, you know, you're in a rut. I don't think so. I think that if you play multiple D&D games, and in every single D&D game you play a cleric, and you play the same kind of cleric, you play a cleric that worships this kind of god whose parents were killed, and you don't care about him because you hated your parents in real life, and you know, you have a scar in your eye because you saw a movie where you think that's cool, and every single character was like this, and then you came up from an, oh god, you know, put me to sleep already. You know, I think that is a problem. You should mix it up, try and play something different and new. But when we're talking about these roles, these group dynamic roles that people kind of, these almost Jungian archetypes that people fit themselves in personally, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to diverge from them. I will tell a group, you know, maybe you should diverge from them, but that's just because that's my personality. I cannot fit myself into any one of these categories that we have thus defined. And I don't think we've defined them all, because I've seen lots of different ones. I mean, the leader position, the ninja killer position, the planning guy, the face man, the caretaker, the quartermaster, you know, and on and on and on. I can't fit into any one of those because I am a random scattered personality, and I want to try. I do them all. whichever way the wind is blowing, that's the way
I go. Well, but I mean, I could even call that an archetype in and of itself.
It's sure. Like the jack of all trades.
Yeah. You know, Dan, this reminds me of the story you used to tell of our old group of friends when we were in high school. You used to describe each of us based on a trip to a grocery store we went to. Do you remember that? Tell that story for us.
Oh, man, I can't remember it all, but looking around, and I think, you know, this in general, the way you look at your group of friends is a great way to look at the party of role-playing game, because there's something that keeps you together, but everyone nonetheless takes on these roles. And I remember looking at my group of friends and being able to pick out how we were all like a family. That everyone in there was like a family. Mm-hmm. That, for example, I remember that Mike was like the grandpa.
Yes.
Because he's always worried about everyone and doddering over everything. And he's over here and over there and constantly worried about stuff. I'm like the dad. I've always like, come on. Stop reading that. Put that down. Yes, put that away. If you're not going to buy it, let's go. We've got somewhere to be. I remember Tex was like the sailor uncle who you probably would prefer not to be around your kids, but you can't really stop him because he's the uncle.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of have to tolerate his foul mouth and obscene stories while he's there. And I can't remember the whole thing, but I was able to go down the list of everyone and define us as a family unit.
Right. And that's what I'm getting at here with this archetype beyond the archetype, is that it's not about who's the healer guy, who's the fighter, who's the decker, you know, who cares? It's about what the personality is driving the character, I guess. I guess,
you know, if you put it that way, then I would definitely soften my stance. If we start at the base level, just so we stop using archetype so many times, let's call us maybe class versus role, or profession versus role. Profession is I'm the healer. Role is I'm aggressive, or the face man, or the caretaker. That I think the professions I would stand by, they have to be well-rounded and well-represented for the reasons I gave earlier.
I think that's debatable, but I think ground there.
Yeah, it's okay. On the bell curve, I think 80 or 90% of the time that those need to be represented. But I would say, I would definitely agree with you if we move to that role, that personality type that is beyond the profession, it's the application of the profession, then I would certainly come further over to your side that you could have a party of healer, rogue, fighter, mage, where they're all caretaker and personality.
Yeah.
And that would not hinder the game.
That would be a wild game.
It'd be wild.
You know, I can't even imagine what that's like.
If you over stereotype, then it'd be a boring game because you'd all be playing the same character.
Oh, you'd never leave the town because you'd be so worried about each other.
Well, or you're so aggressive, then it'd just be a boring game because you'd all be the exact same thing. But I mean, once again, look at your real circle of friends. Within your real circle of friends, you've got different people who probably have different backgrounds, different skill sets. But at the same time, there is still some kind of overlap where your interests and your personalities either are the same, or if they're not the same, at least harmonize in a way that keeps you together as a group of friends. That even despite the fact that everyone's a different family member, you're still one family. And that family, I know we've all had this in our lives where you can sit back and be like, man, those Smiths, you can tell he's a Smith because he blah, blah, blah. Everyone can think of something like that. And I would agree with you. I'd come further over to your side on that where I don't think you have to be so diverse
now
if you look at that role.
Now, let me ask you guys this. Let's take it from a different tack. What role or archetype within an archetype, or however we want to define this idea, what role do you think you guys take on?
The protector. Always the protector, whether it's an MMO or a tabletop role-playing game or even in real life. Yeah, I mean, in an MMO, I always play either a healer or someone doing midfield.
Total support class,
Or someone doing midfield defense. Yeah. If you look at it in role-playing games, the one we just played, we did a More Machine Iron Kingdoms mashup. And the powers I had, you know, my character was working specifically to protect a guy that owned a business who had liberated him.
Right.
My abilities included things like counter charge. So if somebody charged a team member, I could intercept them. You know, my character had all these immunities and such, so he could stand in the way of harm. You look at it in real life. I'm the type of person, there's nothing I wouldn't do for a friend. Mm-hmm. I'm always the first person to pick up the tab at a restaurant or something like that. And that shows up in my role playing as well. I always play some kind of a protector type.
I have to completely agree with you. If anybody is sitting there thinking, oh, Dan's just getting off on himself, he's being egotistical, he thinks that he's, you know, the uber friend. No, honestly, as a person who's known Dan for almost 30 years now, Dan is exactly like this. That is what you are like in real life. And you have always been like that. You are the ultimate friend, the ultimate loyalist friend. So, well, that's enough stroking your ego. Pat, what do you like?
Well, and again, from what you've hit on here, it's the role as opposed to the character, because I've played many varying characters, from the really more of the shining good to the more dubious in nature. But the common theme that they always have is kind of like what you're saying, is somewhat of a protector, but it's more of a, I more protect the, like,
it's like you have ideals.
Yeah.
I think that you're more of an idealist, yeah. Really. It's from what the couple of times I've played with you, it seems that it's like you're the ethics guy. It's really weird. Now, and that doesn't mean you're necessarily the good guy or the bad guy, but It's like you define ethics within the party, and you try to get the party to operate within this ethics. Mm. Now, this ethics might include torture and murder and theft and arson and various other bad things. But I have this feeling that it's just like the people who operate within this wall of ethics, you support and you're cool with.
Uh-huh.
But I have not seen it yet, but I've always gotten the idea that if someone within the party started to move outside the ethics, you would be the first one to step in. Am I close on that?
I think that's probably a fair assumption, yeah.
I think
I would say that would fall in line with the ones that I've done before. I think
you're the keeper and liner. You, as stupid as that sounds,
no, I am.
You keep the other players in line, not with an iron fist, but you define the boundaries, and you're like, we're going down this path. We're evil guys who rape and pillage, or we're the good guys, and we don't do that sort of thing.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So we got the protector, and we got the ethics guy. I mean, the
I can't comment on past. I just haven't gamed with you enough to see.
I mean, I haven't really either, but that's just kind of the vibe I'm getting. So, Chris, we haven't gamed with you at all, and you're not really a real person anyway. You're just this computer construct that Dan's created in his basement.
True, true.
So, what's your role?
You know, I'm similar to what Pat described, in the sense that I think the role that I generally take is kind of, you know, fallen across the spectrum, but I honestly have to say I default more to the face man, mm-hmm. in the sense that it's very difficult for me to not be very participatory in what's going on, whether it's just negotiations with someone, whether it's trying to strike a deal, whether it's just general role-playing. I'm always in that mix. You know, I don't just stand back, and I just always want to be involved. Now, I'm not necessarily any type of leader when it comes to sealing the deal or taking them in a certain direction or making plans at all. But as far as being present in the negotiation or being, in a certain sense, I don't know, comic relief or support, that's really where I find myself falling most of the time.
There's another archetype I hadn't thought of, the comic relief guy. But yeah, go on.
No, I think that's really where it is. It's I've never been comfortable playing a character that doesn't do a lot of talking. Now, that doesn't mean I don't try and dominate the table, because I'm always very conscious of making sure everybody participates. But I've always got to be in there and voicing, you know, what I want to talk about, or you know, being involved with the dialogue that's occurring.
Mm-hmm.
So what usually ends up happening is character types that I will play, in a certain sense, fall into that role. Don't necessarily play a lot of fighters, or if I do, they're not the strongest of fighters, so they don't really get up there heavy in the action. They fall back on, you know, their more sociable attributes.
Yeah.
So, and I think if there was to be a flavor that I would put on that, I'm similar to Pat in the sense that I kind of play the moralist not necessarily the ethics guy, whether right. it's, you know, good ethics or evil ethics. I have that inborn, got to be a good guy streak in me. So I always default to that side.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely.
My own, it's like I described earlier. I can't define it.
I think you're the explorer. The reason your archetype would be hard to define is because of the fact that your archetype occurs in the metagame, that it occurs before character creation, not like in my case, you can see the protector in the way I apply or play the character. But in your case, it's not in how you play the character, it's how you create the character. Hmm. And I would say it's exactly like how you described the way you play MMOs. It's the explorer, mm-hmm. that you want to try something, see life from a different angle, do something no one's ever done before. That I think the character you would be least comfortable in is the one that's most easily defined.
Hmm.
Or most commonly played.
Yeah.
That would be my observation. Now, here's the thing. With these archetypes,
mm-hmm.
I think there is a line between two ideas. We kind of talked about this last podcast, which is, on the one hand, you cannot escape the fact that you're you. Everything right. you right. know about the world, no matter how sympathetic you are, everything you know about the world is ultimately from your own vantage point, your own experiences, what I colloquially call it is the fishbowl of your own eyes, mm-hmm. the distorted view that you have from your own perception. And on the other hand, there's ruts.
Yeah.
There's the no originality. You play the same guy every time. Seriously, dude, get over it and try something else. Do you think in general, what we're talking about here is the inescapable reality of the fact that there's a single human behind a million characters? Or do you think what we're describing here is a rut that people ought to break?
I cannot say this is a rut. I mean, I have seen people play the same kind of character and fulfill the same role within the group time after time after time, but they play a different character each time.
Yeah, I don't,
you know, and they bring something new and good to the table, yet that's within the same statement, you can always rely on them to fulfill a role. That isn't the fighter, the cleric, the decker, the whatever, who cares. But you can always rely on them to fulfill that same role. And I have this divergent attitude on it. One is, I think that's a good thing. But on the other hand, oh my God, play something different. Always play something different. There's right. always that spirit within me who it's just like new. So I am going to vote with, I don't think it's a bad thing.
I'm going to jump in for any of Pat. I don't think it's a rut either, only because to me, a rut implies that you're not necessarily getting enjoyment out of it. And if they are doing it again and again and again, but yet still seem to be having a good time, to me, yeah, that's not a rut. That's them basically enjoying and continuing to explore maybe something they internally feel they haven't fully explored yet.
And I am also just going to agree with what you two said, is that, mm-hmm. yes, no, what you've described here is not a rut. And I like what we've described here, because I think we expanded on what we talked on in the last episode, where we sort of hit on this whole idea of a rut. And because this really is not a rut, because
right.
it's the role, just like you're saying. It's not that these people are playing the same, you know, they're playing the same gunfighter character every single time, even though we're playing, we're playing
pacifist hippie verse. Yeah, we're playing swords and sorceries. There's no guns, but they're a gunfighter because exactly. they got dual crossbows.
Exactly. So it's not that. That would be a rut.
Barf.
So it is, and I think it further sheds a little bit more light on what you're saying is what you do bring to the table.
Yeah.
What like the person, the human behind the mm-hmm. characters. That's really what it is. It's not so much that it's rut. It's that it's your role. So
yeah,
I think in our alcohol fueled discussion, I think we've actually hammered this and fleshed it out some more, and that's good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give that unanimity. I don't think that would be a rut either. That, as you guys are mm-hmm. saying, if you always play the thief, you're in a rut. But if you simply fall into this kind of implied role,
yeah,
I think that's just the person behind the character. I think it also, in a way, is necessary, because if you try to play something too outside of yourself, you're not going to enjoy it. to some people, myself included, role playing is a form of catharsis. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to lose that outlet of your personal expression. And I think really for a lot of people, most people, I mean, I dare not say every person, but I think for the vast majority of people, that I'll agree with what you guys are saying. I don't think this is a rut at all. Mm. So even though we disagreed on some points earlier, I think in the end point,
I think we had some definition issues, too.
We had to hammer that definition. Yeah. We were confused. It was this whole archetype within an archetype, or the beyond, all that crap was just, it was confusing, Chad.
I'm sorry.
It is very highfalutin stuff.
Modern ways.
Yeah, I did take a psychology 101 class, and so I'm just so weird.
I'm just a simple role player.
Yeah.
I'm confused and frightened.
I'm like a Victorian man in Chad's Elizabethan world.
Yeah. So,
you know, and I was all set, Chad, until you actually explained really what it was you're talking about. I was all set to blame, you know, organized play and living campaigns for, you know, creating that need to have all those roles at the table.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Should we do the fighter, thief, cleric, mage, or should we just do fighter? You know what? I really don't care about that. That is so uninteresting to me. Do we have a little more time? Because I do have another little bit I want to bring up.
We got a little more time. If it's on topic. So far, it looks like you may win this bet because we still have...
God, I wish we actually bet something.
Topic three is leaders. And what was that middle topic again?
We were doing the GM defined.
I'd say good, the bad, and the ugly. We might be able to get both of those in the next show. But you're all right. Definitely two shows.
But all right. So what's your little bit more on this?
My little itty bitty bit more is the one-off. Have you ever seen the roles that aren't the ones that you don't generally find? If you switch from group to group to group to group over the years, you see the same role, you know, you see the leader guy, you see the face guy, whatever.
Right.
It's just different people in different situations. But do you ever encounter those people who it's, wow, this is the first role like that I have ever encountered, and I never encountered it ever again?
You mean from that person or just...
No, it could be from that person. It could be just like...
I've never seen that specific role before, period.
Yes, okay. Yes, that. Because I've seen one before where we used to game and one of the guy's wives got involved in it, and she has three kids. And her role was that of the
group mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really strange, but he's absolutely right.
Yeah,
he's absolutely right.
This woman role played great for someone who never role played before.
Yeah.
And she wasn't the person who was brought into it on what she wanted to try it. She was wanted to do what her husband was into. She wanted to experience this, and she jumped in with both feet and got in there with gusto, and it was really cool. And she was a housewife who had three kids, and that's what she knew, and that's sure as hell what she played. And it was a D&D game, and she was like the housewife to the group.
Yeah, like, have you ever heard about, I mean, like the sports team that has the team mom?
Yeah.
Or maybe even sometimes within a group of friends, there's kind of the group of friends has the one mom that just is always taking care of and feeding.
Always go over to her house and she's always has that that freezer full of frozen pizzas because she knows the boys are coming over. And
yeah, and she was like that within the role-playing party. And that was...
What did she clean up the dungeon or something or what?
Hard to explain.
Well, for example, there was a little girl in the plot, and I won't get into the plot because that's a big long gaming story, but there's a little girl in the plot who was not a typical little girl. There's all kinds of things screwed up about her and out of place about her. But she immediately
took... She was a plot point.
Yeah. But she immediately took to mothering this plot point.
And she immediately took to mothering... before the little girl, she was kind of mothering us, too.
Yeah.
Making sure our characters were happy, fed, had everything going for them. I mean, between the gulf of time and the weirdness of situations, it's a very difficult to explain this. But
I think, like you said, what you described there, and just in those two things, was this is what this woman does day to day.
Right.
I mean, and so for her, it was just a logical progression to that step. And yeah, I think that's that's kind of a natural thing. And I think that's what a lot of people, if you look at yourself and see what you put into your characters, it's going to be the same thing. you know, that's your personality. You know, maybe I mean, it may just be a little bit easier to see that, say, in the mom kind of a character, you know, especially like a mother of multiple children.
Sure.
They'll do that sort of that thing. So, yeah.
Have you guys ever seen anything that's one off that's just odd like that?
You know, my gaming experiences are somewhat limited because while my group of friends has turned over probably several times over the years, I don't game in a lot of gaming shops or a lot of cons. So
it's only been 20 years that we've been gaming. So,
but, you know, still it's probably maybe 36 people tops I've gamed with. And within that, the two unique roles outside of the one you mentioned that I have seen is one is Chad, your explorer thing. Mm-hmm. I have never seen anyone to where just being something different, something they've never been before, that alone is the attraction to them. The second thing, I have never seen anyone do quite right, except one person, is Tex. With every character he plays, his character is a cowboy.
Yes.
And
the hot dog.
I tell you, here's the thing.
The gambler.
A lot of you people may say, well, wait a minute.
I do wild things in my game all the time.
That's fairly common.
But you don't succeed every time.
Yes.
It's unnatural.
The universe or whatever higher power you believe in has conspired to make this real. Whatever this guy attempts, the dice will back. No matter how outlandish.
And all of his characters have the attitude for it. All of the plans he comes up with should never work. And it's weird. And it's hard. Again, this is another one that's a hard role to explain because it's not something that everyone has this sort of, you know, zeitgeist of, yes, we understand what a leader is. It's more of this. He has these outrageous plans that should get him killed, should get the group killed, and nobody should ever survive, and it's really ridiculous and it never ever works, but it does, and he bases his characters around this. he bases their attitude, their role play
around things that have yet to happen.
Yes,
but will.
Exactly.
That's really phenomenal. That sounds like so much fun to be. I would love
it
to
is.
Be
it's wild
like that you know.
Yeah,
because that is so unusual.
Tex is one of the great casualties of gaming because after he got married and then moved away, I don't think the man's role played in 10 or 15 years, which is unfortunate.
He's a victim of normal life.
Yeah, he was a blast to game with, and it's unfortunate that happened to him.
About you guys? Anything else?
I really can't think of any situation like that where that's ever really happened to me. I always just kind of see those types show up, or there was never anything that was so unusual, unless you want to count the character who was utterly apathetic towards everything. Didn't really care if they fought, didn't really care if they cleaned themselves or bathed. You know, that would be about the only thing I ever saw. But again, that particular type of character was done as almost a caricature in the first place.
Yeah.
I would say I'm sort of the same way. I haven't seen anything that was that outlandish as maybe what you described. The only thing that would come close is one guy that that played in the long-running campaigns. Just his personality was so kind of, it was cool and it was kind of off the wall, and he would play characters that were sort of kind of wacky, a little this and that. And sometimes that would clash and sometimes it wasn't, but it was usually always funny.
Yeah.
And he did sort of have that, you know, devil may care attitude. Like
the funny
character.
Man.
Well,
the funny
like
man
that.
Is
and,
not.
And it was just like, you know, crazy stuff. He'd do.
Yeah.
Like one of the perfect example, he had a wand of chaos. Which Wand of Wonder, I think, is based on that. So, you know, every time you push it, it does something different. It is good or bad. He just used that thing time after time. I mean, he didn't care. I mean, it might kill him, but he'd just use it because that was, he loved it.
Yeah.
He loved that chaos, you know, aspect of it. Now, my character in that group wouldn't have anything to do with it because my character was all about living.
Right.
You know, but it made it fun.
Yeah,
so
sure.
That was, I mean, but that's, I don't think that's not necessarily as much as what you're saying, but it was just. It was.
There's one I've seen as well that I don't think we have the time to explore. And this may not even be the proper forum for exploring it.
Oh, I'll do it anyway. We're through the boot.
Chris is still in a garage band. So the self-destructive character.
Yeah.
The character that is intentionally destroying himself.
That's John. John. I would love to get John on that.
I don't want to. I'm not saying you're wrong, but all I'm saying is without John here to explain it or nuance it, I don't want to get into that.
So how about we just tease the listeners
but
with it a little?
It's when you see someone where their continuous role,
yes,
it's not the protector, the face man, the thief, the whatever, but it's a it's a self-destructive character.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What kind of issues and questions is that raise?
Like I said, man, you know, it's John.
I know.
And it's so weird because John, it's one of those diametric things because John isn't like that. He's full of life and he loves to live.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, and I think with
John's
him,
not the kind of guy where I'm waiting on the phone call that his mom's
right.
swinging from the rafters. Yeah.
With John, I think it's just one of those
strangely morose. I'm sorry. Continue.
I just think with John, it's one of those diametric things. He just wants to play something so far removed from himself. So,
yeah,
I mean, and that's just the theory. I'd love to get John on here again. So, well, maybe next time he's on when.
We'll get him back here eventually. If nothing else, the winter break's coming up soon enough. So we'll get him back on here.
So, Dan, what's the next episode?
All right. So next episode, then I guess we're going to talk
of this
about
series
GM assigned roles.
Yeah.
And if time allows, we'll go on to leaders. If not, God. That'll be the third episode.
Under the gun again. This
so,
is exciting.
Thank you guys for tuning in and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
See you later.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.